This is part 9 of responding to your feedback to my question of what your number one biggest songwriting struggle is. We're trying to take our time and answer these as best I can in the moment. So that's why it stretched to so long. Hopefully these are helpful, whether you are someone who asked about this or had this struggle or not, because it does seem like a lot of times a lot of the struggles are very, very similar. So chances are, even if you didn't give any feedback on this or weren't on the email list to get this question, chances are you struggle with some of these things too. So let's talk about your biggest songwriting struggles. Hello, friend. Welcome to another episode of the Songwriter Theory Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Joseph Vidala. Honored that you would take some time out of your busy day to talk songwriting with me. If you haven't already, be sure to grab my free 6-step lyric writing checklist, because there's a lot of questions about lyrics that keeps coming up. And I believe we're talking about lyrics and some of today's specific struggles. So be sure to check that out. It's a good way to actually systematize your lyric writing in a way that you're not just sitting there thinking, improvise brilliant poetry, because that's asking ourselves just too much of ourselves. It's just a very, very difficult thing to do. Humans don't naturally think poetically, so breaking it up into baby steps is a great way to go. That's at songwritertheory.com/lyric checklist. So our first question today is, hello, Joseph. I have lots of music that I feel I have to let out to the world. I've recorded many of them as a solo artist and some in groups that I am a member of. However, there's more than these two channels can accommodate. How do I position/advertise myself in a way people would know that I can be their songwriter? So there is a lot to this question. But for the first one, when you say there's more than these two channels can accommodate, when you say two channels, do you mean the metaphorical channels of like solo artist and then other groups? Do you mean two like YouTube channels, literally, like you have your solo channel and other ones? I'm not entirely sure what that part means, but let's assume that you're just talking about that you sort of have these two creative channels, the stuff you write for yourself and then the stuff that is for groups that you're a member of, which even that sounds like that's more than two channels. But we'll assume that all those groups are so similar that it's two channels, because you say it's two channels. So I will take you at your word. How do I position/advertise myself in a way people would know I can be their songwriter? So the real answer to this is I'm not the right person to ask, as I have never, ever been particularly interested and other people doing my songs. Because if I'm being honest, the only way I would ever do that is if I wrote a bunch of songs and all the cast-offs that I didn't even think were worth recording would be the only ones I would ever let somebody else have. That's just, for me, it's like, I don't know, the amount of people who have written amazing books and then Hollywood gets their hands on it and completely ruins it, right? I'm told, for example, that Aragon, is it called? Forgive me if I got it wrong, but I'm told by basically everyone those books are amazing. And maybe they are, maybe they aren't. It's a long time ago that I heard everybody say that. But then also everybody universally agrees that the movie is awful, to the point that, like, I think a lot of people are never going to give the book a chance because the movie's awful. And, you know, for the longest time, I think Dune was in that similar scenario where, like, the movie was so awful that I don't know if it really hurt Dune, the book's legacy, but now there's actually a really good Dune movie. So I think that's reversing. But and I know it's not exactly the same, but it kind of is, right? As soon as you're an artist, you know, your blood, sweat and tears and your life experiences maybe all bled into this song. And then to see, I don't know, just to take it to the extreme, Beyonce make it into some song that would be described as a bop would just kill me. Like, that would be the worst. Like, where it's like, that's not at all what this song was. And you just totally changed it, produced it in a wildly different way than I would. I'm too possessive to ever want to do that. It's just something I'm not interested in. Unless it's something that, like, this is a song I don't even care about. So, sure, you can have it. So really, I'm not the right person to ask. But I think the real answer is probably connections, right? Or to use one of those services that are out there that are basically, you can put up your songs in a certain database, which is where people will look for songs. And then you could get a call from some random agent and be like, hey, we want to use your song, blah, blah, blah. I think those are the answers, right? The internet is a wonderful place. If you live somewhere like Nashville, then I assume networking, as much as the word networking makes me sad on the inside. Nothing about networking is something that I would ever be interested in. Like, the amount of things that I would turn down if I had to do networking to do it is very high. Not because I don't like people, but because it feels very artificial to me, networking. The idea of, like, I'm going to get into a group of people and the only reason I'm getting to know people is for an ulterior motive. Like, I can't do that. I can't. It's just soul crushing to me. But that's probably the answer. But again, I'm not the right person to ask, but that's my best stab at the answer. For the two channels thing, though, I don't know if this is exactly what you're getting at, but I do think there is a lot of value in having different, I call them acts, A-C-T-S, acts. For some reason, that's hard to say in a way that you can tell I'm not saying acts, the body spray. I think there's a power to that, in that it allows you to give in to some of your different tastes without seeming like an artist with no identity whatsoever, right? Because on a practical standpoint, people do kind of have an expectation that you as an artist is kind of not a single thing, but if your album, like the first song is a country song and the next one is a rap song, and not like rap country or country rap, whatever they call that, but like straight up rap, like straight from the east side or something. I don't know, rap lingo. I shouldn't even try. But, and then your third track is like straight up a Britney era pop song. And then the next one after that sounds like Bob Dylan. It's a Bob Dylan cover. That's just confusing and weird for everybody involved, right? How would you even be a fan of that art? Like, most people are not going to like, they're going to like one of those four songs at best, guaranteed. But I think there's something powerful to having like different acts that you're specifically writing for. Even if those acts are just two different things you're doing. For me, for instance, like right now, I'm literally finishing vocals for my solo act. And then my rock band act, which is at this point fake. It's meant to be a continuation of what my band in college would have been, but it's fake in the sense that like, it's literally just me now. So like really both acts are just me, but one is like Breaking Benjamin star set ish, like post grunge stuff. And the other one is singer songwriter. That is like, I don't know, Five for Fighting, but with more guitars and less falsetto and more belting. And it's more than that. But like, if I were to be like super reductionist about more or less the sound I go for, I think there's a power to that because it stretches you as a songwriter. The way I write those different songs is radically different, right? There are some songs too that I have right now that are sitting in a sort of nebulous space where like, is it really a Joseph single, like my own artist kind of stuff? Or is this like a third pop act type thing? I don't know. I think it stretches you as a songwriter and it's fun and it's a great creative avenue, right? Because there are some days that I just don't feel like working on sort of the singer-songwriter side of what I do. And I just love the like high distortion, harder rock side of what I do. And then there are days I feel the opposite, right? That I'm kind of like, Breaking Benjamin's for 20-year-olds and I'm in my 30s now. I don't actually agree with that, right? But there are some days that maybe I feel like, oh, I'm getting too old for this rock stuff. Again, I don't overall agree with that, but there are just some days I might feel some version of that way, and it's nice to work on the other stuff. So I don't know if that touches at all on what you're talking about with the two channels and that, but for what it's worth, I do think it's a good exercise to write for different acts, even if the acts are completely made up in your head, where you're like, okay, if I were to write this song for like a pop artist, even though I don't do pop, I think that's a fun exercise. And it helps for songwriting. And it's just a good way to kind of get outside of your box and have some fun, reinvigorate you creatively. It's just great in all possible ways, I feel like. So, yeah, that's the answer to all of that, including the first half of the answer, which, again, I'm not the right person to ask. So probably go, don't just go off of what I say. Go ask somebody else who knows better. So how to, next one. How to escape from old-fashioned lyrics without degrading the content. And this is a really interesting one. This is worth a whole episode in and of itself, if I'm being honest. Most of these are, frankly. Now, admittedly, if you were here, the first thing I would ask you is, what do you mean by that? Because old-fashioned lyrics, what I imagine and what you mean might not be the same thing. So I'll try to answer with, like, two different versions that I think you could mean by old-fashioned lyrics. So let's go. Version one, when you say old-fashioned lyrics, you literally just mean not using, like, current lingo and not trying to target, like, the latest pop trend. I assume this is not what you mean, but I just want to cover this one first. In which case, good. Keep it up. Like, don't worry about the latest trend. I think there's a big mistake in general that artists and songwriters make is they chase what is happening right now, which is terrible in many ways. One is artistically, is it really genuine to just pursue what the latest thing is on the radio? I would argue no. Which is not to say that you can't be like, huh, let me try to write a song that's kind of similar to what's out. That's fine. But like, if your whole goal is, oh, I want to just pursue what everybody else is doing, is that what an artist says, or is that what a business person says? And there's nothing wrong with business. I'm very pro business, but I think that like the thought process of a business minded person and a art minded person is different. Even though I love both and I have both for sure. I have businesses. I mean, I have both, right? But I try to separate the two because there are some areas where the art brain is going to help you and there's some areas where the business brain is going to help you. And to me, the business side is where the art goes to die. I think it's like, you could say in a nutshell that there's a degree to which that's what's killing Hollywood right now. Also the fact that they suck at both, which is the crazy thing. So that's why it's so bad right now. But, so don't chase the latest and greatest in giant quotation marks thing. I assume that's not what you mean, though. I assume what you mean is using words and wordings that have very much fallen out of fashion, such as, say, something like thou, right? Be thou my vision. That's lingo that not really any modern song would necessarily use. And for that, I think it depends. If it fits with the song, go for it. Right? If you're writing something that sounds old-fashioned and it feels like it would fit, why is there anything wrong with that? Like, beyond just what does old-fashioned lyrics mean, unless it's something that really feels like you are trying to be something you're not, I think it's probably fine. If it fits with the song, if it fits with you as an artist, go for it. I certainly don't think that old-fashioned lyrics would ever degrade the content. If anything, I would think the opposite, where trying to be modern would degrade the content. Something that I think sometimes your average artist struggles with, that I think is a problem personally, is a lot of times people are searching for commercial success now, or just success, however you define it now, where art is something that usually is timeless. And frankly, almost all the greatest artists of most kinds of art are mostly appreciated after they're gone. And I'm not saying that none of us, like, we shouldn't want to be relevant now instead, or we shouldn't want people to listen to our music. I'm not saying that. But I just think it's very it's a very short-lived thing to chase after the now. Chase after what is good? What's going to be timeless? What's going to be something that makes your song still hold up 100 years from now? If the old-fashioned lyrics are something that really feels like it's dated and not timeless, then maybe don't use it. But if it feels timeless, I don't know. Who cares? It fits, right? So I guess the short answer is I wouldn't worry about it. Just ask, is this genuine to the song that I'm writing? Is this genuine to me as an artist? And if it is, I wouldn't worry about whatever it is that makes you think old-fashioned lyrics, just that old-fashioned is even a thing. Again, outside of like thou and that is admittedly old-fashioned, although I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with that, unless it's trying to be something you're not and it feels forced. I think this could go back to the cringe test. If you read your own lyrics and you cringe because you're like, ugh, I'm just like trying to sound like old English, then maybe don't do it. If you don't cringe and it feels right with what it's going for, I wouldn't change it. And then as a final thing on this, I just realized I might have misread this. If you feel that escaping or getting away from old-fashioned lyrics would degrade the content, don't. Don't. Just anytime you think it's going to degrade the content, that's almost definitely a thing. Just don't do that. Don't do that. Whatever it is, if it's going to degrade it, don't do it. If it's some arbitrary rule that you're following, some advice from anybody, some idiot on YouTube like me or anybody else, don't do it. If you feel like it's going to degrade it, don't do it. Next one. Although I can easily come up with phrases and have good theory knowledge to develop them, just like in your example above, I get stuck with how to write more sections to complete a song that fits well together and flows from one to another convincingly. So far, I've only attempted to write instrumental pieces, so combining melodies with words is something I could do with more pointers at. Thanks. Okay, so for the first one, song sections that fit well. The first, you say you have good theory knowledge. I'm going to take you at your word, but for other people maybe who don't, who are going to resonate with this question or with this struggle, I guess. First thing is that your song sections, your whole song should be in one key. There are exceptions to this, right? You might have a bridge going to a relative minor is common. Some songs do shift to a different key in the chorus, or a lot of songs, especially in a certain era, like the 70s, it seems like every song had a single key change at the end for the final chorus to give it rise. There are always exceptions, but for the most part, make sure that you're writing your whole song in one key. And if you're not, make sure you're doing it intentionally, not just like, oh, I didn't even realize that my verses were in C major and my choruses went to G major. And it just felt disjointed, but I didn't know why. Well, why? It was because you didn't pay attention to the fact that the key just drifted to a different key, which again, if done intentionally, can be, or even unintentionally, it can end up working out. But usually that's something that you would want to do intentionally, not something that you would fall into. Because most of the time, if you just accidentally do that, it's not going to work out very well. So that's one thing. Another thing is keeping the same tempo. This is a mistake that I made that I could rant about and complain about myself for the next 20 minutes. But about half of the album that I, the first album I ever did, under the band name Highland with my college band, more than half of the songs aren't even available for people to listen to right now, partially because I'm so angry at the horrible, horrible decision I made. And my guitarist, to his credit, was like, dude, are you sure you want to do this? And I did not listen to him because I was an idiot. But there are tempo changes between song sections and they're terrible. They're awful. Unless there's a really good reason, don't have tempo changes. It goes to the same thing as key changes, right? Yes, there are exceptions. Yes, it can be done well, but probably only if it's intentionally. And also in this case, I'm going to say probably it sucks. Don't do it. there are always exceptions, but probably it sucks. Don't do it. And if you do, it shouldn't be significant, right? A song, it's probably not that. Most songs are just one tempo the whole time. some are going to have slight tempo changes, right? Like a rock song that really wants to amp up the energy might sneak in like a 4 beats per minute change between the verse and the chorus, which is basically imperceptible. But it's one of those things that just like, you don't know why, but it somehow feels even more energetic. And really it's that slight tempo change, maybe something like that. But anyway, so if you start with those two ground rules, right? Same key, same tempo throughout the song, that goes a long way. The next thing is just paying attention to the connecting pieces between your song sections. I think too many times we just like write a verse with, you know, with this chord progressionist melody, and then we separately write a chorus. But we should always spend time with, okay, let's look at the end of our verse, the final chord or the final several chords of our verse, where the melody ends up with our verse, and then figure out from there where is a natural flow to go next. Almost like we're continuing to write the verse, but we're knowing this is transitioning into the chorus. But the chord progression of your verse or the final part of your verse absolutely should affect the beginning of your chorus or vice versa, right? You might rework the end of your verse to fit better with the chorus that you wrote. So just as a maybe silly example, if your chorus, let's say we're in C major, so your chord progression is 1-5-4, we'll say. So that would be a C major, a G major, and then an F major. So that's where your verse ends. A lot of times, having your chorus start on that same chord will probably seem underwhelming. Can it work? Yes. Is it done a lot? Yeah, it is. But a lot of times that probably is going to sound like underwhelming. It's just stayed on the same chord. But from that F major chord, opening up your chorus back to the one chord might be something that makes sense, or the four going to the five at the beginning of your chorus might be something that really makes sense. But just putting some time into not just like, oh, I wrote my verse and now I'm writing my chorus. Like, okay, but think about the end of the verse into the chorus. Think about the end of the verse into your pre-chorus, if you have one, the end of your pre-chorus into your chorus. Think about all the connecting pieces, right? The end of your chorus to the beginning of your bridge. Specifically with the melody, well, really with all parts. Lyrics probably goes without saying, but lyrics. But also chord, right? The chord transition is one that is not underwhelming and makes sense. And then the melody also, right? Being intentional about that, which can look so many different ways, right? It depends on the song, what feels right for the song, what's right for your voice, what is right for just your preferences, your style, right? So for instance, maybe you like a song that kind of slowly goes up in range. So you have a verse, you're singing, you know, around here. And then in the pre-chorus, you're singing around here. And then you get up to here for the chorus, which really isn't that big of a difference, right? That was a fifth from the verse all the way, but it's sort of gradual. Or maybe you prefer, you know, the verse is, and then the chorus goes, you know what I mean? Like, just, oh, big difference, big leap. So again, should be right for the song, right for you, for what you personally like. For the most part, the song is more important, but we also have preferences, right? I tend to like choruses that just explode, which historically has led to me writing fewer pre-choruses than maybe your average person would write, just because a lot of times pre-choruses end up being a stepping stone to the chorus. And a lot of times I really don't want that. So that's going to be partially taste. I've only attempted to write instrumental pieces. So combining melodies with words is something I could do with more pointers at. The first thing on this is listen to a lot of songs and pay attention to it. This is one of those where like the more you pay attention to music, the easier this is going to become. It's kind of like, I think it's Brandon Sanderson. I know I reference him a lot, but he's one of the few authors that actually talks about, you know, how to be an author. He teaches and he does. That's pretty rare, right? J.R.R. Martin or whatever his name is, like he's not teaching people book writing, right? He can't even finish his book, right? J.K. Rowling isn't out there teaching people how to write a book, right? She's just writing new stuff for movies or whatever. So anyway, I think this is something he says. If not, this is something that basically all authors say, which is like, if you don't like reading books, you have no business writing books. And he probably doesn't word it that way. He's too nice of a guy, but that's basically the sentiment, right? You got to read a lot of books to kind of learn about the tendencies, the things that work well, the things that don't. And if you never really read a book before, then how would you even begin to have the audacity to write one? And I think with songs, as songwriters, we need to make a switch. Most people listen to music, but most people listen to music fairly passively and non-analytically, right? They just kind of let a song roll over them and they think that makes me feel good or it doesn't make me feel good. And that's about the end of their relationship. This is like, you know, everybody who tells me some version of, oh, lyrics don't matter because nobody notices when I put all this effort into the lyrics and nobody even notices. Look, I get it. With your average, if we want to use the term normie, right? Your average just non-songwriting person, they don't pay attention to lyrics a lot of times. There are exceptions to this, right? There are people that aren't even musicians and they still care about the craft of songwriting and they admire a good songwriter and good songwriting and they do pay attention to lyrics. There are plenty of those people too. There just aren't as many of them. But this is going to be true for all art forms, right? There's tons of people that went and saw, I don't know, the Barbie movie and thought, oh, that was good, right? But it's like, what? On what planet? This happens, right? I don't want to throw any other movie under the bus right now because we'll leave that alone. But something I would add to this is this, for some reason, has become a unpopular thing I feel like to talk about but yet it should be obvious. For some reason, it's become this weird, twisted virtue signal for people to be like, I like all music, or all music is equally valid and great and blah, blah, blah. And I find something to admire in all music. And it's all just like, okay, I'm sorry. But as a songwriter, shouldn't you have standards? You know what I mean? Like, basically people are bragging about, I have no standards, right? It's like somebody being like, I was going to compare it to food, but maybe for food, there's some value in having no standards just in the degree that like it makes you a pleasurable person for somebody to serve dinner to, because you're not going to be that person who like isn't polite and doesn't eat the food and nobody likes that person. But that's different, right? Because there's a relational element that songwriting really doesn't have. Songwriting is not somebody serves their song to you at their dinner table when they have you over to eat. It's a little different. But who do you want to write? Who do you want to write the next movie that, you know, if you care about a franchise, right? If you care about Star Wars or MCU or some new Lord of the Rings project or, you know, Halo show or whatever franchise you might care about, or just a movie or book in general. Or maybe you have a story in your head, and if you could commission somebody to write a book for you, would you want the person that's like, oh, I like every book, or I like every movie, every movie's amazing? Or do you want the person who maybe is, you know, not super affable and not, but is like, oh yeah, most movies are, I think, kind of crap. And like, there's just a low standard that's out there. And there's a lot of hackneyed writing that is just really cringe. And some of the dialogue is like, wow, a professional who was paid dollars wrote that non-ironically? Who do you want to write your book? Obviously the person who's not like, oh, I just like everything, everything's amazing. No, that's dumb. Like, that's not, and you're allowed to have that, or a human being is allowed to be that person, right? But that's not the person. I don't want somebody building my car or fixing my car who thinks, oh, all cars are great. No. I want you to have a strict standard about there's one right way to make sure the engine is running. Not like, oh, well, different engines are different. And this one is going to cut, you know, it's going to give you a hard time. No. When you want, like, who do you want building your, we could go on forever. It might be less pleasant to talk to the person who has standards, but when it comes to making music, I just think this whole, like, I'm a musician or I'm a songwriter shtick of, oh, so I have to, like, love all songs and pretend like they're all created equal is ridiculous and counterproductive. Because you want to be picky so that you can be picky with your own songs and have standards for yourself. If you like every song, then when you write your own song, you're just gonna, no matter how garbage it is, you're like, I love it anyway. That's not what you want, right? You want to instead be maybe closer to the tortured artist who is like, this line I know isn't working. I cringe at this line. Therefore, I'm going to fix it. Not just, oh, everything's perfect and amazing all the time. And I'm not saying you're this person, right? Excuse the impassioned rant. It's just one of those things I'm like sick and tired of because it's always like a weird virtue signal. And also everybody who says that is a complete liar. Nobody likes all music. Okay. So like, first of all, stop lying. Second of all, like it's not virtuous of you to have no standards. Cause it's the same thing, right? If you like all food, that means you have no food standards at all. If you like all cars, then you just have no car standards. There's nothing to talk about. That it also makes people less interesting, which is the last part of it. But that part is fine. But as an artist, I think that's not a virtue. That's, if anything, a bad thing. You should have standards. And I think it's helpful as a songwriter, if anything, to be overly picky. That doesn't mean you need to share that with everybody. You don't have to be somebody like me who's more than happy to say, look, I think this song that's wildly popular is garbage. it sucks. Or Rick Beato, who's more than happy to, you know, throw the latest top 10 under the bus. Most of the time, appropriately so. The idea that that's... anyway. I think it would help you with the melody writing if you listen to a lot of songs and you try to be more picky. And maybe you already are a picky person, and great. I'm just warning you against the thing that is very common, which is that whole everything's great and perfect and every single piece of music is equally wonderful and blah, 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 blah. And then on the more practical side, the first thing I would pay attention to is matching emphases. And so for instance, if we have, right, just made that up, but what are the emphasized parts? The emphases parts are that, right? Emphasized, emphasized. You can maybe argue emphasized, emphasized, not emphasized, emphasized, or you could argue sort of a pickup note, not emphasized, emphasized, not emphasized, emphasized. Those are probably the only two you could argue. This second note is almost certainly, or this third note is almost certainly not emphasized, although you maybe could adjust it to be. But even that, it's kind of a passing note, right? The tendency is first notes are kind of de facto emphasized. Last notes are usually de facto emphasized. And then often the highest note or the lowest note, those usually are de facto emphasized, but go by your ear, right? The emphases of the notes that are naturally occurring there should match with the emphases naturally occurring in words. So for instance, if this were like, I go to school, like that's a silly line that obviously should be in probably zero songs. But just as a silly example, to is a nothing word, right? I go to school. The naturally emphasized things are go and school, which fits with. But if we had an emphasized word in that, this part here, that would just not fit, right? Because it's not emphasized in the melody. So make sure that those two things fit. I think that's like 90-something percent of the battle. And then the last part of the battle is just what I, the rant from before, which is basically, look, standards are good. I couldn't disagree more with the, like, I don't know, borderline hippie sentiment of everything's great and perfect and amazing and I like all music and that's somehow a virtue that I have no standards at all. And by the way, is that even me being unfair? Literally, by definition, having no standards is someone who basically treats everything like it's equal, right? If you say that somebody has no standard, if your friend, if you think, oh, my friend has no standards when it comes to men, women, whatever, what you mean by that is they think they're all great. Even the guy who's a total jerk, he's borderline abusive, he's on certain substances, like just the worst guy. And she still thinks, oh no, he's great. That's what we call no standards, right? That is what that is. And the idea that that's somehow a virtue when it comes to music is just ridiculous. It's not. It's not a virtue. It's not a virtue for anything to have no standards. And again, when you're creating music, if anything, that's going to be destructive, right? Because now you have no standards. Presumably, if you have no standards for other music, you have no standards for your own. It's kind of like at work, right? Or even a coach. When you think of the best coaches aren't the ones that are like, oh, everything's fine. Oh yeah, that's how you shoot, totally fine. No, the best coaches are the ones that are like, no, this is the way to do it. And they're tough on you and they don't give you a freaking participation trophy, even though your team just got walloped 7-0 and it's soccer. So, you know, pretty embarrassing. Those aren't the coaches that you remember fondly years later that helped you grow better later. I mean, my best piano teachers were the ones that I was fearful. I was fearful to go to her house without having practiced enough because I knew she would know and I could feel it. And that made me practice more. That made me better in a way that a super nice teacher who's like, oh no, everything's fine. No, you want somebody, whether it's a teacher or somebody who is making something, you want somebody with standards. So be that for yourself. I don't know why I went back to that rant. I guess because it's something that I feel like has been a long time coming. It's been like simmering in the back of my head. And I feel very strongly about it in case you can't tell. But yeah. So because those ones went long, hopefully that this was helpful. I think it looks like we have maybe one podcast left of this, possibly two, depending on how long it takes to go through some of these. But again, hopefully this is helpful. If you want help with lyrics, more help with lyrics than I can possibly give in this medium, be sure to check out my free 6-step lyric writing checklist. Songwritertheory.com/lyric checklist goes from A to Z of writing lyrics in 6 baby steps. Makes it way easier than just looking at a blank sheet of paper and asking ourselves, improvise brilliant poetry, which is asking too much of ourselves, unless you're incredibly talented. And even if you are, it still is like, well, if you can make it easier on yourself, wouldn't you want to? So even if you are way more talented and amazing than the rest of us, I still think it would be something that would be helpful. So be sure to check that out. Thank you all for watching, for listening. I appreciate every single one of you. Glad that you've been here for the bonus episodes. Hope you like the bonus episodes. And I will talk to you in the next one.